Try that again.
Well, good evening, everybody. Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Boy here on the Monday night program. How you doing? Is today the winter solstice or is it tomorrow? I think it's today. No, it's tomorrow. What's the date today? This is the 21st. No, I guess it's today. We are going to have a winter solstice celebration on the program on Wednesday night. Christians can join in and celebrate their holiday. And if you're Jewish or Muslim, you can join in and do whatever you want to do. But Wednesday night will be the Christmas program, and we have a doozy for you. I have to tell you, we have a Christmas version of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe that you're going to love. I promise you. Also, a reading about the winter solstice, courtesy of Bridget Wolf, who is one of our ethics advisors on this program. And what else do we have? Oh, yeah, Oh Holy Nightmare. The night before Christmas with Molly. She's getting older now, so she I'm sure she'll want to read some of it. And some other stuff, plus a lot of music of the season. And for those of you listening online, the incidental music that we're playing, their little bits and pieces, is Sting's new album, well, sort of a Christmas album, more like a winter solstice album. If you were watching television late Sunday night, was it Sunday night, Kathy, when they passed the cloture vote, 60-40? You saw the Senate Democrats essentially close the deal on this health care bill. I'm trying to figure out where the death panels are. I want to see the death panels. I want to know when the death panels are going to be set up. That's the Republican, Charles Grassley and Sarah Palin, the rest of them, and Glenn Beck, the psychopath. I want to see the death panel. Where are they? God damn it. I want to see death panels. They promised me death panels. Anyway, the Republicans are just wetting their pants about all the deals that Harry Reid had to cut with individual senators. Like, oh, let me think of one. I got one. Ben Nelson. And frankly, you know, I don't care. I've got all kinds of reservations. You know my feeling about this this health reform, health insurance reform bill that's been passed. The one I would like to see is the complete socialization of medicine in this country, or healthcare in this country, I should say, not medicine, healthcare availability with a single payer healthcare, not government run healthcare like in the UK. But single payer, I would like to see that. I think that what was passed is a kick in the cojones to the Republicans, which in anything, I'm sorry, I am that twisted and sick now. This is what Republicans have done to me in the past 10 years. I am so twisted that any kind of win for the people who still call themselves Democrats, I know, they're just Republican. I understand. But the Republican leadership is just peeing all over itself, all over the halls of the Senate. They're just going berserk about this. And I have to admit that that gives me great and glorious pleasure, even though I don't agree with the bill that's been passed. Oh, but anyway, the Democratic leadership had to provide all sorts of goodies to get the Democrats to vote yes on this health bill. And I love listening to the Republicans scream about that, right? Oh, my God. Scream, you little weasels. Scream, you little weasels. Go ahead. You got your privates caught in the screen door, don't you? Too bad. Scream, you little weasels. I'm sorry. I am that crazed that I enjoy hearing the squealing and the screaming. And the looks on these bastards' faces. We, at 1 o'clock in the morning, we watched Mitch McConnell stand there and whining about, oh, this is being done at midnight. Oh, you dumb bastard, it's being done at midnight because you and your cohorts made it be done at midnight. Well, read Kathy's blog today. She pretty much lays it out. Go to MikeMulley.com. Kathy's the thingy is there, her blog. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But something occurred to me. Am I right? Were Abraham and Sarah brother and sister? Was the man who the Jews, the Christians, and the Muslims claim as the father of their religion, did he have incestuous relations with his sister and vice versa? Are these three religions based on incest and all three religions are against same-sex marriage? Well, what? Am I wrong about this? Somebody help me. I don't have time to look it up. I just don't. But Abraham and Sarah, weren't they brother and sister? Can I get an amen? Can I get a little research real quick? Abraham and Sarah, I believe they were. I think. If so, then are we to believe that these three great religions that will go to the mat about same-sex marriage, our religion's based on incest, so it's okay to do your brother or your sister, literally, but it's not okay to be the same sex and get married? Oh, my God. Oh, now what? Broken stream link. What does that mean? Listening to xylophone music? Oh, my God. Is it connected? Oh, okay. We ought to check this stuff before we go on the air, you know? That would be good. Okay. All right, if you're listening online, hopefully you can hear you can hear the program now. But I just need somebody to check for me and tell me, were Abraham and Sarah, the biblical Abraham and Sarah, really brother and sister? If they were, then are we to conclude that the three peoples of the book base the religions on incest? Tell me it's not so. Getting back to this this healthcare stuff for a few minutes, the Senate Democrats, stapled the agreement together. It's all there, and now they are determined to get everything passed by Christmas Eve. Of course, the Republicans, like I say, they're screaming like men who have gone to the public bathroom and got a very important part of their anatomy caught in the zipper when they're trying to zip up. It's just, there's something about listening to this, though, the squealing, that is so pleasant to me. The legislation is being called the most significant overhaul of the nation's healthcare system in more than a generation. And it will extend health benefits to more than 30 million uninsured Americans, yada, yada, yada. You know the drill. You know what this is, all about. So anyway, Ben Nelson, finally sold his vote, after winning restrictions on insurance coverage for abortions. Oh my God. Okay, Ben. And, he also got an increased federal, healthcare aid for his state, Medicaid, actually. Which, you know, I don't have any problem with. Sure, if Ben Nelson has to cut a deal for his vote to get Medicaid for his state, fine. What does it mean? It means that people who are being sliced and diced by this filthy Bush economy that continues on forever on the horizon will get a chance to get some medical care. Senator Nelson warned that he would oppose the final version if negotiations with the House, which have to occur now, you know, reconciliation of the conference committee, they call it, where they get together and work out the details. But he's threatening to change his vote if the conference committee comes up with changes that he doesn't like. Son of a bitch. So what we have here, we have 60 senators, all Democrats who have agreed to this so far, and each one of them can bring this to an end. each single Democratic senator. Now, this is insane. This is madness. It's insane to require a supermajority to begin with. That's not in the Constitution. Filibuster's not in the Constitution. Every time you hear one of these right-wing freakoids talk about going back to the Constitution, ask them about giving up the filibuster, and they won't know what the hell you're talking about. A little bit more on this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Okay, thanks everybody. It's in Genesis 20, verse 12. Sarah was the half-sister of Abraham. She was the daughter of Abraham's father, Terah. T-E-R-A-H. So they were half-brother and half-sister. They had different mothers, but the same father. So it is true then, I don't know, unless you want to split hairs, that all three peoples of the book had their religion based on incestuous relations back at the very beginning. This is crazy stuff. I mean, it really is. Now, as far as, who can you sleep with? Who can you get pregnant? Who can you, back in the day, you know, all those thousands of years ago, I guess the choices were sort of narrow, right? But the point of all this is not to embarrass the Jews, Muslims, and Christians. I think your stories are very interesting, but the point is these are the same three groups who insist on the sanctity of marriage. And if you go back to the founder of the three faiths, the sanctity of marriage included brothers and sisters getting married. So go figure. I don't know. It's madness. Back to the same stuff. Healthcare reform or health insurance reform. New York Times writes, because the Democrats nominally control 60 seats in the Senate, that's because two are independents, the precise number needed to overcome a Republican filibuster. Every senator in the Democratic caucus effectively now has veto power over the bill. No Republican, of course, is going to support it. Richard Burr, Republican of North Carolina, said, quote, the lines are drawn, mofo. Barack Obama's got to get 60 votes. If he doesn't get 60 votes, the American people win. If he does get 60, America's payback will come in the form of the 2010 elections. My God, what kind of sick thing produces Republican legislators? It's astonishing. Astonishing. Last Tuesday, the Democrats, you know, they had that famous or infamous meeting with Barack Obama. And when the meeting was done, some of the senators pointed to remarks made there by Senator Evan Bayh, the Democrat of Indiana. Bayh said that the health care measure was the kind of public policy he'd come to Washington to work on, and that he didn't want to see the satisfied looks on the faces of Republicans if they succeeded in blocking the measure. So, the measure is going to extend health benefits by expanding Medicaid and providing subsidies to help moderate income people buy private insurance. And of course, the fly in the ointment, one of the many flies in the ointment to me, this legislation require nearly all Americans to get insurance or pay financial penalties for failing to do so. I'm hoping that over the next 5, 6, 8, 10, 12 years, this will be tinkered with. Let's remember that, and I'm not defending it, I'm just saying, when Social Security was first passed, when all of these essential social welfare programs were passed, they were passed in raw form, always without Republican support, by the way. And then over the years, if not decades, they were tinkered with, they were fine-tuned until they got to the point where they make some sense for the country. Now, in place of the public option that liberals demanded, the Senate bill will create at least two national insurance plans modeled after those offered to federal workers, including members of Congress. The bill includes a new government-run long-term care insurance program, and it imposes new regulations on the health insurance industry, barring insurers from denying coverage on pre-existing medical conditions. Even to a cynical bastard like me, that provision, I think, is very important. The insurance companies have, health insurance companies have up to this point been able to select whomever they wanted and discharge or deny insurance to whomever they wanted based on so-called pre-existing conditions. If this legislation eliminates that, well, good. I say good. Now, the amendment also includes the Bill Nelson amendment, let's call it, strictly for Nebraska, a special extension of increased federal contributions to the cost of expanding Medicaid, the state federal insurance program for the poor. And again, I don't have a problem with that. If these are baby steps, incremental steps to getting to the point of single payer health care in this country, if it happens 10 years from now because of this legislation, good. So I got all my objections. I think the whole idea sucks. I think it should have been single payer from the get-go. But if this is the best that can happen, then this is the best that can happen, right? We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. It is the Malloy program. Email here from to comment, whatever. Mike, sorry to burst your bubble here, but Reform Judaism, the largest branch in the USA with more than 900 congregations and 1.5 million people, came out in support of same-sex civil marriage in 1996. There are openly gay Reform rabbis in congregations all over the country. Please don't paint us all with one brush. Okay, I shall not do that. I appreciate the elucidation regarding Reform Judaism. I wish that certain branches of Reform Christianity and Reform Islam would do the same. The only... I'm not trying to be a smartass here to my emailer, but, you know, same-sex civil civil marriage. I believe all marriage should be civil. But I don't think Reform Judaism, I may be wrong, and if I am, I'm sure my emailer will correct me. I don't think Reform Judaism will perform under the chuppah or whatever. No, that's Greek. Will perform a same-sex marriage within the... sanctuary of the temple. That's splitting hairs, and I'm being an ass for bringing that up. Anyway, I appreciate the email about Reform Judaism. Thank you. What else we got in this health thing? Of course, Republicans swore on their mother's graves, which they helped put mom into. On Sunday, they will continue to fight against health insurance reform. Some of them are starting to acknowledge that their chances of stopping Senate passage are slim and none, but they're going to keep going anyway, because that's the nature of obstructionists. I don't care. You know, Democrats simply don't do this. They don't. And they should. I think they should. If this would have been done during the Bush years, I think a lot of the hell that we're going through right now would not be occurring. I just wish Bill Clinton would have been an obstructionist when that bill came across his desk to sign regarding the end of the Glass-Steagall Act, which brought us two and possibly three financial collapses coming, two already. And now we're into the third, or the third may be on the horizon, the collapse of the real estate market. So I wish Bill Clinton would have been an obstructionist, but Bill Clinton was, he just wanted his daddy's approval. Of course, daddy was dead by then, so I guess he saw daddy as Newt Gingrich. I have no idea. These people, I wish all of these people who want to run for president would be required. Yeah, I know. Required. It should be in the Constitution. Anyone who wants to run for president has to do at least a decade of therapy. At least 10 years of psychotherapy, and then have submit the findings by the therapist or group of therapists to a panel of uber therapists who would then look at the results of the 10 years of therapy, where the client started and where the client wound up, and then make a determination that the American public could either acknowledge or ignore. This candidate who wants to be president of the United States is a real sick son of a bitch who has not improved at all. I think that would be a grand idea. And, of course, we would just have a fund that would pay for that, you know. Asked whether he and his fellow Republicans would yet block the bill, John McCain of Arizona said, probably not. We'll fight the good fight. We'll fight until the last vote, as he flapped his arms on Fox News Sunday. The final vote is scheduled for December 24th. Yes, it is, December 24th. Senator John Kyle, a psychopathic Republican from Arizona, was on Sunday ABC's This Week and said that Democrats were using the imminent Christmas holiday to force a quick vote on a bill that he said Democrats were trying to sell on an artifice. What? All these sons of bitches are just hysterically amusing, if it weren't for the fact that they're in their comedic actions, they're destroying the country. They're destroying the political system. But it's so funny, you know, some pig like Kyle. Oh, the Christmas holiday. The Democrats are cause they're using it. They're hiding behind the baby Jesus in the manger and Mary and Joseph and yada, yada, yada. Oh, my God. They just don't stop, do they? Huh? They just don't stop. Well, I know you're at the same point that I'm at. This is just wildly hysterical to watch. Especially the reaction of these Republicans. You know, this bill is essentially, it's going to help some people. Yes, it will. It's going to help some American citizens. But this is a massive Christmas present to the health insurance industry. The ones that actually own the souls of every one of these filthy Democrats in the Senate. The health insurance industry and a couple other corporate organizations own these bastards. They might as well be bots of some sort, you know, cybots or insurance bots. They're not real human beings. You know that yourself. You listen to some of these people, these Republican senators and representatives. You know they're not human. If you lop their head off and reach into their neck, you would come up with a handful of wires and resistors and chips and all kinds of stuff. But it's highly entertaining and amusing to watch them. The insurance industry, in the meantime, is sitting back there saying, well, should we stop them? No, just let them keep going. It confuses the American public even more. Yeah, but, you know, we're the insurance industry. We're getting what we want. Jesus Christ, we're getting 35 million customers handed to us. I know, we are. But let the Republicans yelp and whine and pee themselves. It doesn't matter. We're the insurance industry. You know, our little dogs are doing fine in the Senate, on both sides of the aisle. But especially the Republicans. Let them pee on each other's legs. It doesn't matter. But isn't it embarrassing, the health insurance industry says, that our little cybots in the Senate are acting as though this is not a gift to us? Well, they're just trying to cover themselves. They're trying to divert attention and pretend like they don't really love it. You mean they love it? Well, hell yeah, Mitch McConnell. Did you see him standing there the other night, Sunday night, looking like he just had to go to the bathroom? That was because he was just beside himself with real joy. It's a payoff to those of us who put his bearded ass in there. Oh, I get it. It's so confusing. Yeah, confusing? Well, if you think that's confusing, there's a movie you ought to see. Who's in that, Kathy? Philip Seymour Hoffman. Movie Synecdoche. I think I'm pronouncing it right. Synecdoche, New York. Not to be confused with Schenectady, New York. If you haven't seen that movie, I watched that last night for over 2 hours. And when I finally stopped watching it, I couldn't tell up from down. But it gave me insight into the minds of these Republican senators and representatives. Yeah, if you haven't seen that movie, don't. Just let it go. Paul Krugman, today in the New York Times, you know, points out what you and I know. First of all, he says he considers the passage of this an awesome achievement. Then he goes on to say it's a seriously flawed bill that we'll spend years, if not decades, fixing, but it's nonetheless a huge step forward. And then he goes on to write about the fact that since it was such a weird event in the Senate, shows that the Senate, and therefore the U.S. government as a whole, has become ominously dysfunctional. Well, yes, it has, hasn't it? He says, after all, Democrats won big last year running on a platform that put health insurance reform front and center. In any other advanced democracy, this would have given them the mandate and the ability to make major changes. But the need for 60 votes to cut off Senate debate and end the filibuster, a requirement that appears nowhere in the Constitution, turned what should have been a straightforward piece of legislating into a nail-biter and gave a handful of wavering senators extraordinary power to shape this so far final bill. It's certainly not over yet. It has to go to conference committee now. But Krugman is right. Every time one of these little pants-sweating Republicans start screeching about the Constitution, we got to return to the Constitution, and you get a chance to confront them, just say, are you talking about ending the filibuster then, you little dweeb, or are you talking about something else? We'll be right back.
I'm too afraid to use the phone. I'm too afraid to put the light on. I'm so afraid I've lost control. I'm suffocating without a word. Crazy with spill on my jaw.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Now, as Krugman points out today in the New York Times, consider what lies ahead. He says we need fundamental financial reform. We need to deal with climate change. We need to deal with our long-run budget deficit. What are the chances we can do that, all that, or any of it, if doing anything requires 60 votes in a deeply polarized Senate? Some people will say it's always been this way, but a political scientist named Barbara Sinclair did the math. In the 1960s, she finds that so-called extended to debate-related problems, in other words, a filibuster, threatened or actual, affected only 8% of major legislation in the 60s. By the 1980s, it had risen to 27%. After Democrats took control of Congress in 2006, the Republicans found themselves in the minority, and the threat of filibuster soared to 70%. So, and let's not get all weird about the Bush years. Some conservatives say that the Senate's rules didn't stop Bush from getting things done, but that's misleading, as Krugman points out, on two levels. First, Bush-era Democrats weren't nearly as determined to frustrate the majority party at any cost as Obama-era Republicans are. Democrats never did anything like what Republicans did last week. Republican senators held up spending for the Defense Department, which is on the verge of running out of money, in an attempt to delay action on health care. Bastards. And keep in mind that Bush was a buy-now, pay-later president. He pushed through big tax cuts, but he never tried to pass spending cuts to make up for the revenue loss. He rushed the nation into war, but never asked Congress to pay for it. He added an expensive drug benefit in Medicare, but left it completely unfunded, right? Remember, the Constitution sets up the Senate as a body with majority rule, not supermajority. So that rule of 60 can be changed simply by changing Senate rules. You don't have to change the Constitution at all. Bastards. Steve in Dallas writes, Mike, if the health insurance reform bill passes, the Republicans are afraid that it may be the end of the Reaganist philosophy that has dominated this country for so long. That's why they're fighting so hard. You know, tax cuts for the rich and screw everybody else. If this bill passes, Steve writes, the Republicans are terrified that the Democrats will be emboldened to start undoing all the evil that's been done to this country over the past 30 years. In his blog today, Krugman put it this way, quote, Matthew Iglesias makes a good point. The health care bill represents a return, after 15 years, to the idea that Congress should be trying to pass major legislation that tackles major national problems. And even beyond that, it restores an even longer lost tradition of Congress trying to pass major legislation on specifically progressive priorities. More than that, Krugman writes, it represents a rejection of the view that the solution for all problems is cut taxes and remove regulations. In that sense, Krugman concludes, what's happening now, for all the disappointment it represents for progressives, is an historic moment, end quote. Steve adds, let's hope this turns out to be true. Our country is in desperate need of some real hope and real change. Steve in Dallas. Well, I just find it very entertaining to hear the Republicans squealing like a bunch of stuck pigs. I really do. Oh, my. Here's two comment again when I said that, all right, take the same-sex marriage into the Reform Rabbi synagogues. Mike, yep, most Reform rabbis do officiate at same-sex marriages in the sanctuary, under the chuppah, the wedding canopy. All right, all right. And then Barry writes, not only Reform and Reformation branches, but even conservative Judaism supports rights for LGBT communities. Unlike Catholicism, where adherence to dogma is mandatory, there's a wide range of variation within conservative and even some Orthodox congregations that refuse to accept all aspects of Orthodoxy. it's a work in progress. Then he quotes, Barry sends me something from a couple of years ago in the Washington Post that says, a panel of rabbis gave permission Wednesday for same-sex commitment ceremonies and ordination of gays within conservative Judaism, a wrenching change for a movement that occupies the middle ground between orthodoxy and liberalism and Judaism. All right, guys. All right, everybody. There's nothing like somebody on the radio who gets it completely wrong, which I did. Thank you for the education. I will learn once again not to put my mouth in gear until I engage my brain. But it's still true with Muslims and Catholics. I get 2 out of 3. I mean Muslims and Christians, excuse me. No, that's very true. One should not come across like one knows what one is talking about. Let me change it. I should not come across like I know what I'm talking about unless I really do. Oh, and by the way, Bob Kincaid, there's an email here going around in that part of West Virginia where he does his program. Sent an email. We lost electricity just at airtime. Only came back moments ago. So there will be no rebroadcast of Bob Kincaid's program, I don't think, immediately following this program on the White Rose Society stream. So if you go there and there's no Head on Radio Network program from tonight, it's because the power outage is caused by this incredible storm that has slammed the Northeast. All right, time for a break. We'll be back, so do stick around. I'm going to see if I can find some other stuff that I can get wrong and put out over the air. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. This is the Malloy program. Well, I can't win for losing tonight. Paul writes in, Mike, regarding my take on the health insurance reform, such as it is. Paul writes, Mike, please don't toe the corporate party line. You know this legislation is fascist and is rewarding the insurance corporations that have screwed us for the last 40 years, especially the last 10. The reward is 30 million new victims. NAFTA, which was supposed to be revisited after 6 months, was not changed, and it is still destroying what's left of the working middle class. Mike, what I like about your show the best is when you tell the truth and tell it like it is. Please don't give us the party line when the party's wrong. Paul. Man, well, I did qualify and say I think the whole thing sucks. I'm for single payer. I'm for socialized medicine. And I thought I made that clear. I'm not celebrating what was passed by the Senate. I do admit to glee in seeing the Republicans going berserk because their obstructionist tactics only worked moderately well with the passage of this. That's all I'm saying. If this bill increases certain, aside from forcing people to buy insurance, which, yeah, I think is an abomination. But on the other hand, how much is our car insurance, Kathy, a year? $1,500? Yeah. I don't like paying that either, but I have to. That's mandated, I guess, by state law. Is that federal law? No, I guess it's state law. But I think all the states have to do it, or they lose federal highway funds or something. So please don't misunderstand. I am not celebrating the passage of these of this Senate thing with unrestrained glee that something good has been done. I understand the history of the passage of these kinds of pieces of legislation. I don't think NAFTA fits in there. Of course, NAFTA was a ripoff, a major, worse than a ripoff. It was a plutonium or a neutron bomb as far as the working class in this country was concerned. You know, the buildings are still there. There's just no life in them anymore, the factories and the manufacturing plants. I understand that. But I also understand that early legislation that contributed to the social safety net in this country, legislation enacted 50, 60, 70 years ago, had to be fine-tuned over the course of decades. That's all I'm saying. I'm not towing the corporate party line. Never. And I know that a lot of liberals and leftists and progressives are condemning this. So do I. But not to the extent that I'm going to be inadvertently, without design, on the same side as these filthy Republicans on anything. If Republicans started pushing for more oxygen to breathe, I would vote for more carbon dioxide or advocate for it. Okay? Enough already. Dave in Huntington Beach writes, Mike, as a podcast subscriber, I was wowed by your monologue the other day with the FU Republicans theme. The reason I'm writing to you is to alert you to a phenomenon I've observed. I've been friends with a 70-something Republican, 70-year-old, a guy who is part of a pack of people who bring their dogs to the park and sit in the shade and relax in the afternoon. However, since Obama's election, my friend has started to quote Glenn Beck's Fox show almost exclusively and has been bombarding everyone with the revolution to come talk and of Obama's communism and everything else that Beck spews. Lately, though, my friend has been talking of suicide. After listening to you say that Beck is suicide familiar and friendly, the phenomenon is that Beck influences his audience to do the same. A possible name for this phenomenon could be Beckicide, or maybe Geekicide. Dave and Huntington. Beck is a Jim Jones. Beck understands the same way that Jim Jones understood the frailties and weaknesses of the human ego and the human spirit. Glenn Beck is a predator. You have to remember that. We make fun of this rancid son of a bitch as much as we could for a while there, but he is a predator. He's a destroyer, and he understands the weakness of his people. That's why he is so popular. He plugs into that weakness and then offers salvation. The same way Jim Jones plugged into it with all those people mostly in California, moved them all to Guyana, and then had them commit mass suicide. Glenn Beck is of that same hysteric mindset. I don't think he's funny. I think he's a sick son of a bitch who should not be on the air. I'm serious. But Dave makes a good point. I would not be surprised once Beck is removed, and I think he will be at some point, from the airwaves, that he will try to do the same thing that Jim Jones did with the same result. Beck is a sick individual. His whole family is sick, and he is spreading the sickness as best he can. It's easy to deny your own insanity if you can convince everyone else to be insane. Then all of a sudden the insanity becomes the norm in your little world. But he is. He's a predator. And I just wish he would disappear, that's all. Speaking of things ugly like that, Citadel Broadcasting, one of the nation's largest radio broadcasters, Citadel, let me see here. Citadel handles, you know, the usual gang of swine. I think they, where is it, damn it? Where is it? Oh, the Mark Levin Show, the Huckabee Report. I think they also distribute Limbaugh's program and Hannity's program. Anyway, Citadel has filed for bankruptcy. They own 224 stations across the country. And they filed for Chapter 11, which means they're just going to withdraw and screw all their creditors, which is exactly what Air America did to all of us to whom Air America owes tons of money. They owe me, they owe Bob, they owe Al Franken, they owe all kinds of people money. Chapter 11 is where you hide continue to screw new people, which is exactly what Air America has done. But now Citadel has their chief executive, someone named Fareed Suleiman. It doesn't sound Irish. He says, quote, "We are pleased with the support from the majority of our senior lenders, and we look forward to working with the remaining senior lenders and other stakeholders to ensure a complete and expeditious restructuring." Fareed Suleiman went on to say, quote, "Our business will continue as usual and the company will work to emerge from the restructuring process as quickly as possible," end quote. Under the terms of Citadel's agreement with its creditors, the company will reduce its $2.1 billion worth of loans to $760 million in exchange for this and that and the other. You know, you would think that a company that handles all these right-wing talk radio filth, all these thugs, that they'd be rolling in money, right? Wouldn't you think that? But here they go, Citadel Radio Broadcasting, ducking into Chapter 11 protection until they can figure out who they're going to screw. I hope they screw them all. I hope anyone who owns stock in Citadel winds up holding an empty bag. Is that more of Molloy Schadenfreude? Yes, it is. What you gonna do when the silence calls your name? Speeches to the wind, count the votes that might have been. What you gonna do when the silence falls?
Truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Molloy.
It is 21 past the hour. I think it's time that we took some phone calls. If you you'd like to join in the discussion here, that would be great. Um, while we're waiting, oh, the phone number is 877-996-2556. Jay writes in, I know catastrophic climate change upsets you, Mike, but did you catch what Naomi Klein said regarding Copenhagen? The bottom lines are that, one, it is all about resources, and that, two, it is a cull, C-U-L-L. People are dying now, soon, in huge numbers. But people don't just die. First, they kill each other for what's left of the resources. They've known that catastrophic climate change is coming, they being Exxon and their ilk. But tobacco industry-style biostitution, like prostitution, is being used yet again to squander lives. Meanwhile, the theater of the absurd that is the economic downturn is just another distraction. Is Chevron losing money? Hell no. They're down here doing to Australia what they did to Ecuador. Corporatists aren't red or blue, and the people's government is merely their tool. The two-party structure is just a disguise to obscure the corporatist state. We didn't really elect Obama. He was strategically allowed to win. They, quote, quote, knew that after Cheney and Bush, a Democrat would take too much of the vote to allow them to steal it again. So they let someone win who would serve their needs. They always had a Palin as backup. Either way, chaos would erupt, and chaos is what they wanted. But with Obama, they hit the chaos trifecta. They knew the Republicans would hemorrhage stupid in reaction to any Democrat, but a, one, black man, two, with liberal affectations, and three, a weird, scary name to provide endless false trail distractions, perfect! They needed us distracted for what was to come, and the stupid-fueled chaos is working. Make up a rumor, spread it on the net, even if it's unsourced. It then gets regurgitated on the news. Doesn't matter if it isn't true, because it, rather than the truth, is being discussed. Meanwhile, we are being culled. The richest 1 or 2% are not worried. Catastrophic climate change is their little end-of-days soiree. And there are plenty of us begging to be their slaves. But the rest of us can have a party of our own, a third party. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Step up, progressives, this is our time. The planet may be broken, but that just means we can get it cheap. Maybe there is a hell on earth. So bring on the rapture. If all that's left are cockroaches and progressives down here, it'll be better than the stew of stupid we're swimming in now. Ooh. Ooh. From Jay, who is currently ensconced in Australia. It is crazy, isn't it? It is crazy. Absolutely crazy. We just let me mention again that tomorrow night is as regular a program as we ever put on, and then Wednesday night is our winter solstice program with some Christmas undertones or overtones or side tones or resonances. Everything in the traditional Christmas celebration has been ripped off from pagans and Celts and Wiccans anyway. So having said that, I don't want to, you know, be the Grinch who stole Christmas from anybody. If you know, people get a lot of fun, I think people still get fun out of Christmas, just like they get a lot of fun out of Hanukkah or... oh gosh, I can't think of a fun Muslim holiday. I know they exist. I'm not trying to be a smartass here, but I can't think of one, and I dare not say one for fear I'll get it wrong, and then I'll get a bunch of emails telling me to do better research. Eid, is that how you pronounce it? E-I-D, Eid? Is that a fun one? I don't know. I think any religious holiday is fun on the surface, but underneath you find all that darkness and weird stuff. Just waiting. As soon as you're having a good time, the weird stuff reaches up and bites you on the ass. You know what I'm saying? We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Ties and socks. My kids are never happy with what's under the tree. Soon they'll understand Christmas sucks. Whoa, every freaking year Christmas sucks. Christmas sucks.
The sale from Saturn is here with the biggest savings ever on every remaining new Saturn, or 0% financing for qualified buyers plus bonus cash. Length of contract limited. Take delivery by January 4th. It's about 25 before the hour. All right, time to do some phone calls, huh? Jason's in Clarksville, Tennessee. Hey, Jason.
How are you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Doing good. I called you a couple weeks ago. I was a pretty heavy listener to, you know, Beck, Kennedy, Rush, all of them.
Yeah.
And I got XM Radio, and I turned it on one day when I saw the America Left. I turned it on really thinking, oh, this is going to be rich. You know, I can't wait to see what these people are saying.
Mm. Yeah.
And I caught your show, and I can honestly say since then that, you know, the stress that you feel listening to the Republican talk radio is unbelievable, because all it is doom and gloom.
All it is what?
Doom and gloom. I mean, it's just, it talks, all they talk about is how bad everything is. And I'd really just like to thank you for what you're doing. I mean, just 2 weeks of listening to your show has really changed my mind. I mean, a 180 from what I thought about everything. You know, but I never knew really, and maybe it's that I wasn't so much a conservative as I thought I was. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's just all that I had ever heard. And, I mean, it's really enlightened me a lot listening to you on the radio, and I really just like to thank you. I almost want to apologize to the American people just for being a Republican, almost. That might sound weird, but as bad off as that is, that's kind of how it is. I mean, I like to thank you for what you're doing.
Well, I appreciate it, Jason. The only thing I can come up with is that you probably weren't as committed to that insanity as you thought. I mean, we don't do a whole lot on this program except, talk about the issues. It's not an attempt to get anyone to think a certain way as it is on these right-wing shows. As a matter of fact, I get a lot of email from people telling me I'm crazier than a loon, which is fine. I'm totally immune from that stuff at this point anyway. But, I would imagine, you know, I'd like to take a lot of credit, Jason. I can't, because I don't believe that, people who, as you say, do a 180 were that, in such a short period of time, were really that committed to begin with. So anyway, I'm glad you found liberal talk, and I hope you keep listening, man. Have a good holiday. Thanks, Jason. I guess what I'm thinking about here is my own dedication to two things over the course of my life, the biggest part of my life. First of all, the religion that I was brought up in. I was never a big, ardent advocate of Christianity, but, I had it in my head and in my bones and in my unconscious and so on and so forth that such a thing existed. And, you know, theism, the Christian variety. And it took a long time, a lot of thought, a lot of research, a lot of reflection, a lot of insight, inward thinking, a lot of reading not just theologians but anti-theologians, if you will, and to come to the conclusion that Christianity and by extension all religions are, you know, they're mythologies. They're they serve some function, but they're nothing more than mythologies, neither more nor less than any religious mythology has existed. Yeah, you know, pick one. There have been hundreds of them. And secondly was my dedication to the Democratic Party. You know, again, I was immersed and inculcated in Democratic Party principles. And I still believe in those principles, but I'm not a Democrat anymore because it has changed into something that I find screechingly abhorrent, much the same way as religion has. So, but that took, you know, took a long, 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 long time in both of those. And I maintain that people who change very quickly were not really dedicated to the belief from which they turn all that deeply to begin with. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It makes sense to me, damn it. Nancy's in Sebring, Florida, listening on Sirius. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, good evening, Mike.
Hi.
Love the show.
Thank
you.
Well, thank you.
I am a state employee, and I work with a lady who is just an absolute right-wing wacko Republican. And I was walking through the office today and talking about health insurance, and I was complaining that we didn't get the single payer and, you know, better choices. And she goes, "Well, not me." She said, "I am thrilled to death to have my health insurance, and I don't want any government involved in it." And I said, "Well, wait a minute. You work for the state. You have a government-run health insurance." And she said, "No, I don't. I have Blue Cross and Blue Shield." I said, "Sweetie, it's negotiated and run by the state of Florida on your behalf." And she said, "No, I don't. The state doesn't have anything to do with it."
Oh, my.
It ended up in... It was such a ludicrous statement that I just sort of walked away from it. But because I admire your comebacks and your comments, I just wanted some feedback, first of all, that it is, in fact, a state-run program, and just some pointers to kind of for my next discussion with her.
Well, I'm not sure how that one works, but if the state of Florida, if she's a state employee and she has health insurance negotiated by the state, and it's through Blue Cross Blue Shield. I don't know how Blue Cross Blue Shield is constituted in the state of Florida. That used to be, you know, back when I was a kid. Oh my God, I can remember my mother, I think, way back in the day had Blue Cross, health insurance. That's how we all got our tonsils out, my brothers and sister and I. But, I don't know how it's constituted now. I think she's talking kind of moronically to say that there's no government involvement. Does she think that she picked this policy, that she determined what would be covered and what would not be covered, or does she think that the state of Florida did? I mean, that would be a question to ask her. Who negotiated the terms of your insurance package?
Yes, that's exactly right. I didn't quite get that far with her because she was like, "Well, no, this is my insurance." And I said, "Well, you're very lucky that you have a good insurance."
Well, the other thing, too, you can ask her what happens if you quit your job or,
yeah,
or you
yeah.
get fired. Which is not, that doesn't indicate, that it's government run. It just means that, I mean, if she worked at General Motors and lost her job, she would lose her insurance. But I guess the most immediate question that comes to my mind that I would ask her is who negotiated the terms of your health insurance? You know, I mean, was it you or was it the state of Florida?
Yeah. I said, "Well, you picked the carrier that the state offered you." I said, "You know, but if the state dropped Blue Cross of Blue Shield, you wouldn't still have it. You would just pick another carrier." I said, "So in that sense, you're picking the carrier, but you are still covered under a government sponsored insurance." And of course, she hates the thought of that because she just, you know, doesn't believe in any kind of government-run anything.
How old is she? Would you guess? Just guess. 50.
Oh, she's 50-ish.
50-ish? Ask her, I mean, this might work. Of course, I pretty much can guess what her answer would be. But you might want to ask her, well, what are you going to do when you're 65? Are you going to absolutely, utterly, completely, totally refuse Medicare?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing about it is in Florida, Blue Cross Blue Shield is the carrier for Part B of Medicare. And each state, of course, negotiates who their Part B carrier is.
Mm-hmm.
That every state has the same Part B carrier.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be like people on Medicare saying, well, I don't have Medicare. I have Blue Cross and Blue Shield, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
They simply are the negotiated carrier for Medicare. If you live in Kentucky, the negotiated carrier is Metropolitan Life. So every state can have under Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the exact same thing to me. The state negotiates, but you get to pick the carrier.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you don't have a government policy, and she's obviously in a group getting group rates under mm-hmm. the state.
Well, I don't get in these discussions anymore in the real world. Sometimes I do on radio a little bit, but in the real world, I just I understand fully willful ignorance and how powerful it is. People who want to remain ignorant will remain ignorant. It doesn't make any difference. And, I mean, you can say anything you want to say. You can provide any proof you want to provide, and it'll be, you know, the person to whom you're presenting the proof will just deny it, ignore it, pretend it's not there, act like you're crazy for presenting it. But if she does become unemployed, if she did become poor, if she did lose everything like so many people are experiencing in this country right now, she probably would qualify for Medicaid. And I would imagine that if that were her only option, that she would not be decrying Medicaid or government-run health insurance. Yeah, I got to leave it there. Thanks, Nancy. Good luck with this person. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Melvin, he pretends that I am Murphy Brown. He'll say, are you ready? We'll say, whoa, man. Let's wait until the wife is out of town. Later on, if you wanna, we can dress.
Gather me some cherries.
The sale from Saturn is here with the biggest savings ever on every remaining new Saturn, or 0% financing for qualified buyers, plus bonus cash, length contract limited, take delivery by January 4th. It's 10 before the hour. Hey, we got a couple open lines here. So if you want to join in, now's the time to do it. 877-996-2556. We will be here tomorrow night, and Wednesday night is the Winter Solstice program. And then Thursday we're off, and Friday we're off, and all next week we're off. And during that time that we are not broadcasting, we will have, I guess the Christmas show, the Malloy Christmas show, will run two more nights, Christmas Eve and Christmas night. Right. And then next week will be Brad Friedman will be filling in most of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday and Friday of next week will be, I don't know, encore performances, not the Christmas show again. No, don't do that to people. But the Malloy Solstice Christmas show. We had a lot of soul searching about what to do this year because I'm so turned off by all religion. And after chatting with the executive producer and reading the emails that came in, I think we can kind of nail it down. we might do the reading from the book of Luke, which is the most mythological reporting of the birth of the Christian Messiah. It just is. And it, you know, it's also, as far as I've always been concerned, the most poetic, if that's the right word. So we may do that. I'm going to, bring Molly in for, the night before Christmas reading, which is, you know, fairly pagan, fairly Celtic, I guess. I know, not St. Nicholas, but you know what I'm saying. The reindeer. They didn't have reindeer in Greece. Wasn't St. Nicholas a Greek? Anyway, the Catholic Church de-sainted him anyway, didn't he? Years ago? Yeah, I think he's been de-sainted. What happens to ex-saints? Ew! They become Jewish? Muslim? I don't know. What happened? They don't just disappear. Maybe another religion has the obligation to absorb them. I have no idea. We also have a real nice piece written by Bridget Wolfe. Regarding the solstice. It's a little bit different, this year from what she normally provides. But you're gonna like it. I was reading it today and it's real nice. And then the, what to me is an extra special gift from our program to you is, the latest Bob Alexander written and produced Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, as performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players, including, I think Molly has a little bit part in it, which was kind of weird. But anyway, so that's Wednesday night's program. It's a must listen if there is such a thing on the Malloy show. Wednesday night's program is one of those. That's providing all the equipment works and we don't have power failures and lightning storms and hurricanes and all the other crap that usually plagues us here. So that's Wednesday night. The Radio Gumshoe episode is, to me, it's one of the, it's the best one that Bob writes them. And writes the scripts, and we do, you know, we do our actor's bit, and then he provides the production, and then sends it back to us for broadcast. And this one is an absolute hoot.
This one is really good, but I have to say my favorite so far has to be the one where Rush Limbaugh was reduced to a puddle of goo. He ripped through his suit and he collapsed into a wading pool. I'm sorry, that was just, it's hard to top that.
Well, I think this one tops it, the one that we'll be playing Wednesday night, so stick around for that, or come back for that, or whatever, you know. Veronica is in Dallas, Texas, listening on XM. Hey, Veronica.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, I wanted to chime in and let you know what I thought about Uganda, because I think it's a big deal.
Well, that's, I've been following that on Rachel's program last week about how the Ugandan parliament tried to make, put the death penalty in place for gay folk.
That is a big deal. If that is allowed to happen, if that's allowed to continue, that'll be a one drop in the bucket. You know, you've got, one country will do it, then the next, and the next, and the next, and the next thing you know, if you're GLBT, you're going to be dead. You're going to be persecuted.
Yeah.
As a person that's bi myself, you know, I live in Texas, and the place I live, I'm surrounded by a lot of people who are just pretty much up in my grill all the time to try to convert me over to their deal.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually in one place where a lady actually told me that my station in life was to have children and get married and get it done. And I was like, and I basically put my hand up and said, I'm not interested. She's what I would call a Republican. that's a Republican, but they're so right wing that they have the sexual maturity of a 12-year-old prepubescent boy. So they're a Republican. Look it up in Urban Dictionary if you ever get a chance.
Oh, is that where Republican comes from?
It came from me. I created that, Republican. And,
oh, that's yours. Well, that's a good one, Veronica.
Well, it's all, you'll note that on my site, on my Twitter, I'm afraid to advertise. I don't want to get anyone in trouble, but I'm electro_cat. I mentioned that, and this is going to offend a few people. I'm sorry if it does, but.
Well, I'll tell you what, you got to do it quickly. I have 20 seconds.
Religion is for the weak-minded.
Well,
we need to evolve, and I love you for saying what you say about religion.
Well, amen. I don't think anybody who is a sentient being would disagree with that. Veronica, I got to go. Thank you, Veronica. We'll be right back. Truth Seekers, stay with us. The hour. This is the Malloy program. Thanks for either hanging around all this time or just tuning in. If you are just tuning in, boy, you missed a hellacious first 2 hours. Do I want to add anything before we go back to phone calls? I don't think so. Dave is in Chicago listening on XM. Hey, Dave.
Hey, what's happening, Mike? I'm a truck driver. I travel 48 states, and you were talking about your book the other day.
Yeah.
Not only am I going to buy your book, many times I stop by bookstores, maybe once, twice, three times a day. I'll make sure that your book is prominently displayed, no extra charge.
Well, thanks a lot. It's written. What we're waiting for is I wrote it in such weird chunks, and my editor, you know, any writer without an editor is ridiculous. You got to have an editor, but the editor is Bob Alexander, who has written a lot for this program, and he is, you know, he's working on it, but he's got his own life too, and it's probably going to be well into the first part of the year before this sucker is finished. In terms of the editing process, there's an awful lot of stuff that he has to work with, and it's got to be something that not only reflects the attitude on this program, because that's what it's about, but also something that we both think is saleable. So it's all been written. I don't have to do any more work where that's concerned. He does. He's got to do the editing, and that's what he's working on.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I'll be looking out for it, dude.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dave. Take care, okay? All right. Bye. Drive safe. Safely. Drive safely. Yeah, I guess it's safely. 877-996-2556 is the number. Chris is in Menomo, British Columbia, right?
Nanaimo, actually.
Nanaimo, that's right. You told me that the last time. I forgot it. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Mike. Just a word about the book. When you get it edited and all that, that's great. We're going to buy a copy. But we're wondering if we could get online a digital, unedited, unabridged copy. You know, the one that before you sent to Bob.
Well, we don't, it's not going to be online per se. You know, Bob will be emailing chunks to me after he does the first edit, so I can do this. You know how that goes. I'll do the second edit. He'll do the third edit. We'll keep flying back and forth here, but, an unedited version would be kind of clunky. He's editing for form, not for content. The content pretty much will stay as it is. What Bob is doing is trying to put it into some kind of coherent flow. So what the, you know, the finished product will be pretty much what it is now. But it would be too difficult, frankly, to get it all online right now. It's but we'll
Well, the guys online think that maybe it'd be more telling if we could get your flow, what state of mind you're in when you're writing it.
Well, no, that'll be there. That won't be taken out at all. Trust me. That's one of the things that Bob's working on is how many times it's acceptable to have the F word in one book. And I don't think there's an upward limit. So anyway.
Well, thanks, Mike.
All right. All right, Chris. Thanks for checking in. I don't mean to make it sound like it's going to be one long, you know, spew of invective and curse words. It's not, but you know this program. You know what you get when you come here, right? So, back to your phone calls. Well, no, we're not ready yet. What's up? Is everybody, what are y'all doing tonight? This is a Monday, for God's sake. Usually we are just overwhelmed with calls in here and have to keep delaying them and putting them on hold and not answering the phone. Is it because it's just 3 days before the winter solstice? But the number, we still have two open lines again, 877-996-2556 is where we're at. So... Steve is in Portland. You listen on
Yes, Mike. this bill is a horrible disaster. There's nothing good about it. First of all, it mandates that we all buy these crappy policies, but there are no cost constraints in the bill. Are you still there?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There are no cost constraints. So, and there are also no requirements that these companies change the way they do business. So, let's suppose that they graciously condescend to accept somebody with a pre-existing condition. Nothing in that bill requires them to or prohibits them from charging quadruple or quintuple the premium rate. So I'm right now on board with Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham, hoping they can stop this goddamn thing.
you want to stop it. Why would you align yourself with psychopaths, though? I mean, they're...
Because, Mike, think about it. There is nothing in this bill that benefits the average citizen who is already suffering from either no insurance or incredibly expensive insurance that can be canceled at any time. If you look at this bill, there's nothing in it that controls the cost. So, it, as I said before, if someone is accepted, say, with a pre-existing condition... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm not saying anything. Go.
Oh, I'm getting an echo, I guess. I turned the radio off and I'm still getting it. The fact is that there is nothing good in this bill. It's been crafted by the insurance companies, and Obama and the Democrats have caved all the way along. And what we need to do is to kill it completely and start over again somehow with a bill that provides universal health care. This bill is not a good one, and I hope it doesn't pass.
All right. Well, and that's thanks, Steve. That certainly is a legitimate position. And I guess almost bottom line, that would be my position, too. The reason it is not quite my position, and I may be just a delusional, lost in space liberal here. OK. And if that's the case, OK, I'll try to reform. But the reason I agree with what Krugman said, that, yeah, it sucks. But what do you want at this point? Do you want something that is a foot in the door, if that's what it is, to universal coverage? Or do you want to just tear it all up and shut the door and forget about it and start all over again 20 years from now? You know, I don't know at this point. I've been saying on this program, I'm sick of talking about it. I'm sick of watching what passes for debate In the House and the Senate, I'm tired of these lying sons of bitches on the right who come up with the death panels and all this other stuff. You know, I don't know what to say or do at this point. So my position is strictly for me. It's not for you. If you think, and a lot of people in the blogosphere who are saying kill the damn thing, a lot of people in the blogosphere who are saying, no, it's a foot in the door. So I guess you go with the one that you think is right. I'm not advocating either position. I don't think I do that on this program, be an advocate. Oh, yeah, I talk about ending the wars. But as far as health insurance is concerned and the reformation of how we get medical coverage in this country, I've made my position real clear. I'm in favor of the only possible solution to me is single payer. That's the only one. Socialized health care availability, not government run, not government employed doctors, but single payer. In the meantime, if this works toward getting that, hip hip hooray. If this doesn't work toward getting that, then I think it will probably crash from its own weight. I don't know. I understand your position. I understand anyone who's against this, anyone who says, okay, it's a toe in the door. At this point, I tend towards the Krugman camp, but you know my bottom line feeling here. I'm not going to advocate for any of it, frankly, unless it's single payer. The sale from Saturn is here with the biggest savings ever on every remaining new Saturn, or 0% financing for qualified buyers, plus bonus cash. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by January 4th. Hour. Michael is in New York listening online. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm fine. You know, thinking about this whole issue, Krugman's point, I think it makes sense to a certain extent. I mean, I think it's a real gamble, but it makes sense if, for example, the Democrats actually have a plan to put together a public option or some sort of Medicare buy-in through reconciliation. I have no idea whether they do, but Harkin says that they're going to start working on that right away as soon as the health care bill is passed. Other people have said that. I don't know whether that's in the cards. It would make sense. I think it's the only way the Democrats could redeem themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it is a pretty bad bill. It's pretty scary.
Yeah,
it's out of pocket costs.
I agree that it's a bad bill, and I kind of feel like back during the campaign when I was such a Kucinich supporter, and I said, yeah, but when the door slams on Kucinich and any second or third choice, whoever the Democrats nominate, I will support. Not that anybody gives a damn who I support, but I mean just me. I would go into the booth and vote for that Democrat, and I don't regret the fact that I did. I'm not pleased with what Obama's doing, but I certainly don't regret the fact that I voted for him as opposed to McCain. Now, I could have voted for a third party candidate. I was not inclined to do that last time. The next presidential election, I will be.
Yeah,
well, I feel kind of like that now. I realize that this bill sucks. It really does. This so-called health insurance reform bill, is not what it is touted as being by its sponsors. On the other hand, like I said earlier tonight, the fact that it is a punch in the eye to Republicans gives me some kind of childlike pleasure. I'm not saying I'm acting like an adult about this. I do believe that the only answer for this country is single payer. And I'll do whatever necessary to get to that point. Not that there's anything I can do. You know, I mean, what the hell can I do? But go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know, that's an interesting question. And I would say, I mean, so many people ask it. I think there are two things people can do. Basically, right now, I mean, talking about a third party, for a third party to be at all successful, we have to build it. I mean, there aren't any third parties that really
right.
have the strength. The Green Party is loosely organized, hardly has much of a structure. There aren't many people actually in it. But if there were more people actually devoting themselves to building the Green Party, it could become something. Also, the second thing people can do is just hit the streets, demonstrate, you know, organize demonstrations. Because the corporations will roll right over us if they don't face any resistance. If we're just going to let them, I mean, they definitely will. I mean, that's really what we can do. And
all right. Well, you know, you're right, Michael. I'm certainly aware of that, and the idea that organization is absolutely necessary. I know. I just hope it comes to that. Michael, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Email from Tony in Maine. He says, you're right about this health care bill. If it does eventually pass, it will be a baby step toward getting a single-payer universal health care plan for all Americans. Plus, if the Republicans are unhappy with it, then you know there must be something good about it. Are they not wrong about everything? So while I wish we did have a single-payer system in this country, we have to take what we can get right now and hope it leads to something better in the future. I know many on the left are unhappy, and I can see you are getting some flack for your position, but we have to remember the system we currently live under and think of it more like winning battles instead of winning the war all at once. By the way, the winter solstice officially began today at 12:47 this afternoon. Tony in Maine. Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, happy winter solstice. The health care bill that's passed by the Senate, the one that was passed by the House, I completely understand the positions, the pro and the con. For the time being, I support the idea that something got passed. I know what it is. I mean, insofar as anybody knows what it is. The goal has got to be single payer, but I just think a step toward that, if that's what this is, I don't know. You know, again, I may find out that, you know, I'm just pissing in the wind here, that there's really no there. If that's the case, then I'll have to come on this program again and say, gee, I'm sorry.
Look away. Look away.
Before the hour. All right, Bears writes in regarding health reform. He writes, the so-called health care reform bill is like a square wheel for everyone but the greedy SOB insurance companies. It's insane to believe politicians will come to their senses overnight, cure themselves of their addiction of feeding at the insurance company troughs. There's no reason they couldn't open up Medicare and initiate single payer before the end of 2010. It's clear and obvious if we continue settling for blank, it's what they'll be content to sell us. He used the poopy word there, didn't he? Okay. Dave is in Shorewood, Minnesota, listening on KTNF. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, doing okay, I guess. I think the way this whole thing has gone down is just cries out for the Senate to revamp the filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just looking ahead at everything they want to try to do, anything from reining in Wall Street to the Employee Free Choice Act. You just name it down the road, we're going to be faced with the same amount of BS as we've seen here, and I can't see it ever letting up. And last week, Tom Harkin floated the idea, and he tried this like 15 years ago, and they never passed it, but it kind of put a damper on the filibuster at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think it'd do that now because these guys are so on the...
Yeah, I think the bill that Harkin and I believe Lieberman also was involved. I think I got this right. The filibuster, it would take 60 votes to break a filibuster, and if they didn't get the 60, then it would take 57, and if they couldn't get the 57, then it would take 53. And if they couldn't get that, it would take a simple majority, 51. I don't understand. I don't understand the whole idea of the filibuster anyway. Dave, thanks. It is obstructionist. The only familiarity that I have with the filibuster when it was used extensively was, I was too young to remember this, but it was used to stop, civil rights laws from being passed back in the, I think it was back the late 40s, early 50s. And Southern senators, white Southern senators, used the filibuster. I think, who was the guy that couldn't keep his pants zipped over here in South Carolina? So many of them. That old fart that died a year or two ago. You know who I mean. He was so effective at it. It was, he was the one that started the Dixiecrat, Strom Thurmond. He started the Dixiecrat party. Isn't that a cute play on words? Dixiecrat, Democrat, Dixie, blah, but, the filibuster really and truly is nothing more than a tool to obstruct and stop real debate on an issue. And as such, you'd think that a reasonably intelligent deliberative body like the Senate is supposed to be, that they would get rid of this. I know what I just said. Especially since it is extra constitutional. And I love to hear these right wingers talking about, oh, we got to get back to the Constitution. Oh, really? Okay. Well, then get rid of the filibuster, you lying bastards. Paul is in Canton, Georgia. Hey, Paul.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Not too bad. Slightly change the subject. I didn't know if you saw that, but Ray McGovern was on Press TV today.
He was on which?
Press TV.
No, I didn't know that. No, huh?
Yeah, he was discussing that he thought that the U.S. Navy and the Iranian Navy should sign basically a non-aggression pact because he's very concerned about Israel attacking Iran and, you know, forcing us into the war. So that we won't get involved with the war.
So he's suggesting that who sign a non-aggression pact?
The United States Navy and the Iranian Navy.
Well, that'll never happen,
right.
and McGovern knows that, because that would mean an attack by Israel would result in the United States responding, and
right.
The United States would attack Israel on the same day that they're giving drinks of ice water in hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was worried that that there's too many people in the Congress that seem to think that Israel's policies in the Middle East are ours and are good for us, and he's concerned that we're going to be drawn into a war with Iran because of Israel.
Mm-hmm. That is the fear. I don't think that would happen, though, unless it appeared as though Israel were under imminent threat. I think if Israel were to attack the United States, to attack Iran, that the U.S. would go on high alert, but it would stay out of it unless it appeared that somebody else would get involved to go after Israel, or the Iranians were getting the upper hand. And then I think, well, look what happened when the Israeli invasion of Lebanon a couple of years ago. Everybody in the Bush administration kept their mouths shut, including our crappy-ass Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, while there was murder and mayhem occurring and an invasion of another country. The United States said nothing, just sat there. And I think that the same thing would happen if Israel attacked Iran. And the only way that we would get involved on any level would be if all of a sudden it appeared that the Iranians were either getting the upper hand or holding their own. And I think any full-scale or even half-scale military attack on Israel would result in the United States committing a military response. But I don't think, short of that, that the U.S. would get involved. We might promote it. There might be talks right now between the Likudniks in Israel and the Likudniks in the U.S. government about supporting such an attack. Who knows? But I'll tell you what, if the powers that be on this tired old planet really want the end times to commence, just let something happen between Israel and Iran.
Yeah, because the Iranians already said they'll make sure they block the Strait of Hormuz and oil flow will stop and everything else, and that would cause a lot of problems for us, and that would draw us into
it'll cause a lot of problems for the whole planet, because we have been dumber than hog snot in allowing ourselves to be held hostage to fossil fuels when we knew better. Any kind of a confrontation between Iran and Israel. Of course, the Christian Armageddonists, the ones who are waiting for Jesus to be all happy with all the death and come sliding down to earth, they encourage something like this. They would love to see. I remember going, and Kathy mentioned this a few months ago, going to those rapture-ready websites when Israel invaded Lebanon, and these sorry sons of bitches were already greasing themselves up so they could slide right out of their clothing and rapture on up to heaven. I mean, it's murderously insane. It's beyond criminally insane. It's murderously insane. But you're absolutely right, Paul. Or I'm right. One of us said this. If there is something violent occur between Iran and Israel, then game, set, match. It's finished. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. I really don't. There are too many people with too many countries with too many nukes and too much hatred and misunderstanding on this planet right now. And the overarching reality is global climate change is bearing down on everybody. The financial meltdowns, even though the U.S. stock market keeps, stays up, a lot of people in this country go, well, things can't be that bad. Look, we're back up to 1,400 or whatever the hell it is. Oh, come on, people. Come on. Come on. Come on. Oh, never mind. Come on, he says. Yeah, okay. Gary's in Cheyenne, Wyoming, listening on Sirius. Hey, Gary.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Thanks to you and Kathy and Molly for having a Merry Christmas. Anyway.
Thank you. You too.
My point is I'm not real happy with this bill. I don't think anybody who has fought as hard as most of us have for as long as we have for something decent are happy with it. But I really equally angry with people like the caller a half hour or so ago that called in, and there's nothing good about it, everything bad about it, and you got to just kill it and start over. Man, that's what the other side is trying to do, for starters. I mean, I can give you one example of something that's good. I've got a daughter and a son-in-law that have worked at separate places out in Oregon for almost 20 years, and son-in-law was laid off this spring, and they have a two-year-old with born with a heart defect.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his insurance. I mean, he worked for a state university, and his insurance is gone.
Yeah.
They can't even afford insurance. This would provide something, and because they're on, because they're living on one income and below the poverty line, they would get some help in getting some insurance. And there's thousands of people that are in that situation in this country today. I mean, I don't think that by and large the prices are gonna, of insurance are going to come down. But I think it's a foot in the door and a step in the right direction. And I think we've got to keep on. And also, when I hear...
Hey, let me, Gary, let me put you on hold a second. I've got a break bearing down on me here. Just stay right there. We'll come back and finish this up right after the break. Christmas Carol. 10 before the hour, we're talking with Gary in Cheyenne, Wyoming. All right, where were we, Gary?
Well, you know, I just think that there is so much misinformation. You know, I'm not a brain surgeon. I don't know all about this thing. I get my information from you and Harman and Senator Bernie, whatever his name is, up in Vermont. I can't think of his last name.
Sanders.
Sanders, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even Howard Dean, I listened to him.
Right.
And he's not happy with it. But his quote about killing the thing was not accurate, and he denied saying it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much misinformation. I've got a niece that has a daughter. She's 20 years old now. But she was born with a virus that destroyed her liver before it was born.
Mm-hmm.
And her medical bills have been horrendous, but she was on her parents' insurance. This bill will allow her or force her to be able to stay on her parents' insurance for another 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And her she had a liver transplant when she was six. And her anti-rejection medicine is $1,000 a month. You know, there are enough good things about it that I'll take the poison pill and take it, even though I'm not happy with it, because it'll help a bunch of people.
Well,
and hopefully we can keep pushing and prodding and make the thing better.
Well, I hear you, Gary, loud and clear. Thank you. I hear you. That's all I can say. You know, they say all politics is local, and you can't get any more local than your own family. And, you know, it's fairly easy for me. I've got health insurance through my union. And it's easy for me to be, this is just a Malloy testimonial, to be critical of what the Senate and the House and the Obama administration, what they have done under the guise of health insurance reform. It's very easy for me because I don't have family members who are on the verge of bankruptcy or into bankruptcy because of a lack of health insurance. I don't have family members who have chronic situations that are impossible to pay for without health insurance and can't get the health insurance because of pre-existing conditions. So while it's easy to criticize what has been done, I just I just wonder, and I'm not trying to be a jerk here. I'm not trying to challenge anyone who says that this is garbage and should be killed. But I'm just wondering, would all the people who are saying, kill it, kill it, kill it, it's no good, would they still be taking that position, whether they're writing in the blogosphere or calling this program or calling Hartman or whatever you do, would these people still be so adamant in opposing this if they had a situation to deal with, like the family of our last caller, or anybody out there who is desperately in need of health insurance? I don't mean to make this into some kind of a weird psychic wrestling match, but the fact remains that, you know, that infamous or famous statement, all politics is local. And can it get more local than your own family, your own children, your own daughter-in-law? You understand what I'm saying? So if the people who are will be most directly affected by this, in the sense that this will give them access to health insurance, Is it cool for you or I to say it should be killed? I, and I'm just tossing the question out there. I'm not looking for an answer, but I think it's one that ought to be considered. Don't you? I mean, seriously. If there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who will benefit from what the Senate is doing and what the House is doing. Look, I hate them all. I agree with that. And I think the whole thing is not half a loaf. It's a tenth of a loaf. And it may be a payoff to corporate America. And it may be the insurance industry is going to get even wealthier than they are. Okay. Well, then let's take to the streets and round them up and cut their heads off. Let's bring out the guillotine. What do you want to do? But if, on the other hand, there are thousands upon thousands, hundreds of thousands of families that are going to benefit directly from this, what do we do? And those are fair questions, not requiring answers, but just thought. That's all. And that's the basis that I say it's a foot in the door. I don't like it either. But when I get a caller like that, and I get the emails, and I get dozens of them, of people who may agree that it's not what we should have in this country in terms of federal or national health care, but it's something that will rescue their particular family. And then you multiply that by the hundreds of thousands, if not literally millions, of families that will be rescued by this. What do we say? What do we say to them? Well, I'm going to take the intellectual or the political point of view that it sucks. And if you are a casualty to my attitude, well, that's the problem here, right? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Men are